Sticks and hits and goals and saves and slap shots and goons. We've got sportly commentary to an NFL commute. But we also cover movies, TV shows, hits and tunes. It's your weekly bowl of hockey and nonsense. Part 2.
I'm Greg Wyshynski of the Worldwide Leader in Sports, ESPN. You might have seen a little documentary about Mark McGwire and Sammy Sosa on our airwaves recently, chronicling the steroid-free home run chase that they had.
Yeah, I'm Ryan Lambert from just this podcast right now, and I didn't see it, but I heard it was not very good.
Oh, I can't speak to that. I mean, I'm sure everything that we've ever done is great.
Sean McAnew, The Athletic, also did not see it, and also heard that it wasn't good.
Hey, get what? You don't even know. You didn't even watch it. Neither of you did.
I feel like steroids was part of that story. I vaguely remember that being a thing.
A footnote at best, if memory serves. Actually, to speak real for a second, I always found it to be incredibly uncomfortable, the cottage industry of head in the sand baseball punditry that occurred around that time, where, you know, like Mike Lupica was a guy that I read growing up in the New York Daily News. Not everybody's cup of tea necessarily, but a guy that I read. And he wrote a book about McGwire and Sosa's home run race. And I remember reading it, and it was like the most sort of like kind of like side-eyeing performance-enhancing drugs, but not like front-centering it.
Yeah.
It was sort of like succumbing to the romanticism of baseball and the joys of the home run race, and then not acknowledging the roided-up elephant in the room. And I don't think he was alone in doing that. Like, I feel like there was a whole cottage industry of baseball guys that were so still recovering from the 94 strike and loved the long ball. And refused to talk about things like a juice ball or steroids for like a good decade until like people started to really get caught.
Right. And I mean, you know, I remember at the time there was that whole, I don't remember what it was called, but they caught McGwire with, not even caught. McGwire had something in his locker that was like.
His locker. Right.
And
Andro. Like,
It was Andro. That's what it was called. I couldn't remember. I wanted to say creatine, but I knew that was wrong. But it was just definitely a thing where everybody was like, I mean, I don't really give a shit. And I think that's an appropriate response to it. I don't give a shit. Let him take steroids. Who cares? Let him do it now. Like, look, there's a lot going on in baseball these days.
Right.
You know? Like, I think that – because let's put it this way. Everybody cares until it's your guy. You think any San Francisco Giants fans are like – you know what, Barry Bonds, I can't fuck with that dude anymore. Like, he did steroids. Right. Well, no, I mean, he hit 73 home runs and all that kind of stuff.
And as you pointed out, I think he should be in the Hall of Fame based on what he did with the Pirates. Like, he was the best left fielder in baseball for a good stretch.
That's
correct. You know, I'm a Mets fan, so I'm not really a baseball fan. But I think it's sort of – I've always been uncomfortable with the obliviousness of some baseball fans. There's two reasons why – baseball was saved in the 1990s. The New York Yankees and steroids. That's it.
That's right.
I mean, it was the nadir of sports popularity because they wiped out a season. Nobody was into it.
The taste
of the American sports fans were changing. And then all of a sudden, the Yankees started winning all these World Series. And then all of a sudden, everybody started breaking home run records. So I guess you could throw the Ripken streak in there, too. That helped a little bit, too.
It did, yeah. Everybody loves an attendance award. But, I mean, look.
Kevin Costner doesn't, I can tell you that.
How about this, though? The frickin' National League getting rid of the DH forever. That's it.
Oh, yeah. We should talk about that. Sean, I think you mentioned that. Did you mention that in the email?
No, that was Ryan, I think.
It was me.
Ryan,
I love it, though.
Secretly,
I think
more of a
cool
baseball fan than I had understood until this week.
I here's what I would say. I like the concept of baseball. I never watch it, but like I love to sit there and think about it a lot.
Yeah, I mean, I understand where Sean's coming from because baseball seems so quintessentially Americana that it seems like something your body would reject.
Mm.
But I think you do seem like a guy who might also want to sit in the bleachers and crack open a cold one and munch on some peanuts.
That's right. Oh, man. You get a nice bag of unsalted peanuts at a ball game. You're sitting pretty, baby.
Yeah, that's called an ingredient. That's not actually a snack unless you salt them and roast them.
No.
Sean, do you like baseball?
Yeah. I actually – well, here's – baseball – when I was a little kid, was my sport, even more so than hockey. Like, I did, that was the Blue Jays were just kind of emerging from post-expansion, becoming contenders, and, like, that was the first sport I really fell in love with. It was the sport I played all through as a kid, and obviously got to see my team win a couple of championships, and it was great. And then the Blue Jays just stopped mattering for, like, two decades. And even though I'm a fan of the sport, like literally, I mean, two decades of not contending, and I just sort of fell out of day-to-day fandom. I still love the sport.
It's a lot, man. Like, they're like, oh, yeah, we need you to watch 162 of these things. 90% of the teams in the sport suck, by the way.
Yeah, and these days half of them aren't even trying to win. I mean, like, we talk about tanking in hockey, but I mean, there's half the league is just like, yeah, no, we're not even gonna, we, like, you guys don't have a catcher, it's fine, just let the ball hit the backstop and we'll go get it. And it's different, and it's a bit of a mess, but I love the sport, but I kind of fell out from it, and to the point where these days, like, I hear about, you know, star free agent, and I'm like, I have no idea who that guy is.
I
still cannot think of anything I'd rather do on, like, a nice summer afternoon than, like, be at a ballpark somewhere watching a game. Like, it's...
And I think that the function of that, I completely agree with you, by the way. Like, I'm at a point in my fandom where I could name the Mets and then maybe 10 other guys in the league. And I think that's a function of no longer playing fantasy baseball.
Yep.
I just don't have the time.
Part of it.
And also just not watching a lot of it anymore. You know, I'll go and, you know, watch the, you know, the fathers of all my friends used to be the ones that would sit in their underwear on the couch and watch a Yankee game while listening to WFAN talk about the Mets, you know?
Yep.
And I'm not part of, I'm old as fuck, but I'm not part of that generation that can just sit down and watch a baseball game. Like I could binge, you know, half a series in the time it takes to watch a baseball game. So, like, I just don't have time to dedicate myself to watching baseball.
I could 100% name more members of, like, the 85 Blue Jays than current National League players, I'm willing to bet.
So, like, let me get this straight. You would be able to name more people nostalgically than currently? This doesn't
come
seem
on.
Like
I'm crazy. I know.
I know.
In fact, today's quiz, 85 Blue Jay or TikTok.
Kelly Gruber.
I'm doing
it. Kelly Gruber. Hey. That is a TikTok sound and name right there.
It really is. But yeah, so the thing I wanted to say about the DH, though, my friend made this point to me. That might be the last thing in sports where everybody's like, hey, we need you to go out and do this thing you're, like, awful at. You're, like, unbelievably bad at. And that's really weird. Like, it's true. Like, the only thing I can think of besides that is, like, you know, making a punter tackle somebody. But that's more of a, like, last line of defense kind of a thing than
I would say there's only the only other example, because that's what you're talking about with regularity. So I would agree, because the only other two examples I could think of are in emergency situations, like a David Ayers situation would be one. And then the other one is
also
baseball.
Although he won, so, I mean, couldn't have been
right.
That bad
okay.
at it, right?
That's
but
enough.
It was, exactly. But the other one would be in baseball as well, which is that when you – and this is kind of an emergency – when you've used up all your player movements
in
your lineup.
You got to have a position player pitch.
Yeah, have Jose Canseco pitch or whatever. Yeah. Like, that's the other thing where you're forced to do something you can't do. Ironically, also centered around pitching.
Do they still have Ryan, because I don't really follow basketball, are there still guys who are, like, terrible at free throws that you just go
I mean,
over
it's
and, like,
rare. Like, okay. Nobody's Shaq, right? Like, right, nobody's like, oh, yeah, if we just follow this guy, he's only going to hit, like, 1.5 points instead of 2 on average. Yeah. So.
There's no hack a Durant going on.
Yeah, no, everybody in basketball is pretty good at shooting the ball at this point. A lot of guys' deficiencies are more like, oh, he can't defend, or, you know, like, he's slow and he doesn't think the game, that kind of thing. Everybody's got a little bit of a three ball in them at this point, you know? Yeah,
that's what I figured. It's sort of on this topic, but I found this fascinating because the baseball draft was last week, I guess, and the Blue Jays had the fifth pick. And because the baseball draft is weird, they ended up getting a guy who was considered either the first or the second best player in the draft. He's this kid. He's a great hitter. He's got the athletic skill to play a bunch of different positions. And I just found it fascinating because, like, there's all these glowing scouting reports about how his bat speed is amazing. He thinks the game at a pro level. He can play. They don't know what position he's going to play, but there's a whole bunch, and he's got the talent and all this. Mm-hmm. And then they just slipped in. They're like, the only concern is that for 2 weeks before the pause, he couldn't throw. But they think it was a physical thing, so probably fine. But that's something to keep an eye. Yeah, the fact that the guy maybe can't throw a baseball anymore is probably something to keep an eye on. That we might want to check in on that. But that's like you don't see that in hockey. It's not like, yeah, Connor McDavid can't turn left anymore, but we're pretty sure it's going to be okay.
I think there's a concern that a lot of guys in this league can't turn left. Here's the thing I'd say is that about the DH, which is that I'm a National League fan. I promise everybody we're going to get to hockey in a second. I'm a National League fan, and I grew up with the strategery of National League Baseball.
Oh, Christ.
So I can't. I know.
Oh, double shift. Oh my Lord! You guys think this is so complicated? You National League nerds.
No,
Harold
Baines
loving bullshit.
No. You're Greg's right. It's cool and good that you get a choice between either a 15-minute delay in the action of the game or a guy who hits 112 standing in the batter's box for three straight strikes down the middle where he doesn't lift the bat off his shoulder.
Should I put my new pitcher in the pitcher spot, or should I replace one of the other four guys in my National League lineup who are hitting 180? Oh,
you're whispering sweet nothings.
Now I'm
going
to go out and strategy talk to the umpire for 25 minutes to explain this.
Thanks.
Fucking
the only
love
good
it.
Double switch, the only impressive one is when they put the pitcher in the outfield for like one batter. I miss that. They don't do that anymore where they would like just throw the guy in right field and be like, if the ball comes, run away. Then we're just going to play the percentages here and then throw the guy back in. That was
cool. That incredible pressure that you'd feel watching a National League game, knowing that the time is running out before a guy hitting, you know, 089 is going to come up and he's going to either try to bunt or you know, swing three times.
Ground into a triple play, yeah.
It's the best.
Pitchers
I love it.
Hitting home runs is awesome. But other than that,
It's happened maybe four times in the history of professional baseball. But yeah, it is cool when it happens.
No, it's cool, though. No, I think baseball is much better when 105-year-old Dave Winfield can prolong his career by 10 years by not having to play the field anymore. It's good times.
Yeah, I'll still take that over the 160-pound guy holding the bat with the wrong end, which is...
I always loved the argument that the pitchers weren't good hitters because they concentrated so much on their pitching that they couldn't hit anymore. I'm like, it doesn't seem right.
Yeah. Well, sure it does. What are you talking? Of course it seems right.
I don't know. I understand that they may not necessarily be good hitters, but like, I don't know. I just figured at some point. Like, they were probably good hitters in college. They weren't, like, fucking
the thing is,
atrocious
like,
hitters in college.
If you've ever seen, like, a major league pitcher, or I guess a former major league pitcher, like, sometimes they do they'll do these old-timer softball games, or they'll have, like, these touring softball, and it's like, come see former. You see some, like, pitcher who hit 120, gets up there, they can hit the ball 500 feet, because they're amazing athletes. But it's just, that's how hard, that's why it always cracks me up whenever someone's like, you know, people are like, what do you think you could do in pro sports? And someone's like, I'm pretty sure I could get hit in the major leagues. And it's like, buddy,
yeah, if you got 600 plate appearances, you might make contact a couple of times.
You would not be able to stay upright in the batter's box for the first 400 of those when you saw, like, the first time they threw a curveball at you, you would be done permanently. Like, there's no, and these guys are like, I think I could hit a home run if you gave me a whole season. No, man, you could not.
That's right. Was it Willie Mays Hayes that couldn't hit a curveball, or was it Pedro Serrano? I forget.
I think it was Michael Jordan.
That's right. That was part of the last. That's right. That was part of the fucking the Last Dance.
Although they did say that if he probably got like one more season in the minors, he would have been a major league baseball player, which is right. Fucking crazy. He's 30 years old. He hasn't played organized baseball in like 15 years.
And again, with the benefit of hindsight, all they had to do is say, "Michael, the baseball said that it's better than you." And
that's when it got personal
fucking
for me.
Babe Ruth. Yeah, exactly. Hey, the Buffalo Sabres fired everybody. Let's talk about that. 22 heads rolled this week.
That's insane.
Courtesy of Terry and Tim and Kim Pegula, including Jason Botterill, who you may remember 3 weeks ago got a vote of confidence. And again, you know, we're using vote of confidence as sort of the catch-all phrase for what Kim Pegula said. It goes a lot farther than that. It was, he's our general manager, and I know this is going to piss off fans when I say it, and we have more information than you to know that this is the right
classic
decision.
The classic.
Oh my God. And then 3 weeks later, they, opened up the appendix of that information to find out that they should fire the guy. Let's start with you, Ryan. What was your reaction to the Pegula bloodletting this week?
It's some real monkey's paw shit, right? Where it's like, oh, get him out of there. Botterill sucks. He's doing a terrible job. He's mismanaged this, that, and the other thing, all of which was right. And the Sabres were like, oh, you want us to fire the general manager? How about we fire everybody? That's really making the fans smoke the whole pack of cigarettes, yeah. I feel like.
That is it is. And the amazing thing is, like, I interact with a lot of Sabres fans. I've written about them. Every time I do, I hear from Sabres fans. The impression I've got is Sabres fans are done with this whole organization, top to bottom. Everyone who's not Jack Eichel, they're pretty much done. And I think if you had gotten to Sabres fans a month ago and been like, do you want to just blow this whole thing up and just get rid of everybody in any sort of they would have been like, yes, we're on board, do it, decisive action. And the Pegulas managed to pretty much do what the fans wanted and still
piss everybody off.
Piss everybody off and come across like they're out of touch and not. It's actually pretty amazing accomplishment that the way that they did it. And now obviously the thing that a lot of people are looking at is how much of this is about having money. The right people, and how much of it is about money, and specifically maybe about saving money. I mean, the Buffalo Sabres aren't going to play hockey again until when? January, maybe?
Yeah.
So I'm very curious to see. They've got all of these job openings now, and obviously they don't have to rehire 22 people. They can go with a smaller scouting staff or whatever else, but they got to hire a lot of people. So do they start doing that now? Which would make me think they're trying to get the best people, or do they wait 6 months? Which is going to make me think they were just trying to save 6 months in paychecks.
I think it's the latter. And again, like, look, the world's all fucked up. The economy's all fucked up. The sports economy is especially fucked up to the point where, as Terry Pegula said, they don't even know if there's going to be fans in the stands next year. And that's a very real thing. Let's not sugarcoat it. I mean, they are being proactive in a way that. Other teams could eventually be proactive in the same way, maybe not with the same level of bloodletting, but we could see other teams make dramatic changes to their hockey operations department in the short term. That said, I mean, Ryan, you mentioned the monkey's paw. Like, the ultimate sort of like black mirror of this whole thing is Terry Pegula comes riding into town in 2011 as a fan who is also a fracking billionaire. And this is four years removed from Briere and Drury leaving the team. Everybody's feeling shitty. Everybody's like, fuck, man, we're a small market. We're not going to be able to compete and keep our players. He comes riding in, and all of a sudden, you've got a guy who loves your team, who's got a bulging fucking wallet, and you're thinking, all right, it's on. And granted, he makes some really bad early splurge decisions in Ville Leino and Christian Ehrhoff, but he's got the money. And he says explicitly that money is no object when it comes to funding hockey operations, when it comes to funding coaching, when it comes to funding scouting. Like, it literally says, don't ever worry about this again. I got this. And then 9 years later, the new mantra for the Buffalo Sabres, according to Terry Pegula, is effectiveness, efficient, and economic. Mention economics a billion times. Mention economics more in his call with the reporters than he did Jack Eichel. So yep. I really feel for Sabres fans who, for a good stretch of the last decade, felt that Daddy Warbucks had come home and he was going to, you know, fund this team and fix the team and spend
if,
for the, up
and
to the
if
roof.
If it got too expensive, what was he going to do? Drill another
well.
Don't worry about
right.
it. And now
exactly.
you've got to listen to, you know, I didn't hear the Pegula call, but Kevin Adams had a long interview on with Tim Graham on The Athletic that went up last night. He must have said the word efficiency a dozen times in that interview. Mm-hmm. And yeah, so, I mean, you know what? Efficiency, yeah, there is a real thing, and it's a nice goal to shoot for. It's also a code word for cheap. We all know this, right? Let's be more efficient. Let's do more with less, right? Like, this is... I don't doubt that there can be whether it's a scouting staff or coaching or front office or whatever it is, you can have too many chefs and too many voices at the table and it does work against you. But man, if I'm a Sabres fan, I'm nervous right now that this is about cutting down, going bare bones and becoming it's this small market situation again, and it shouldn't have been that way because you got the billionaire owner and he owns an NFL team. So and the NFL team doesn't seem to be going cheap. So how come the Sabres are now like the
Ryan, what pause for 1 second. So the thing I was going to say is that, like, if you no longer have the money, or you mean, I don't want to say that you don't have the money. He has the money. If you're no longer willing to spend the money and are cutting left and right within your organization, then what are Sabres fans left with Terry Pegula? You're left with a guy who, on the managerial side, has led this team to 9 straight playoff-less seasons. Every team in the league, including an expansion team, has made the playoffs in that span, in a league where literally you got to fuck up real large to not make the playoffs in the NHL.
Yeah, they could go 82-0 next season, you know, presuming they play 82 games, I guess, and still be under 500 in the Pegula era.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, they're bad. They're fucking horrible.
It's insane. So, but the thing I was going to say to you, though, Sean, is I agree that when you read and hear Kevin Adams talking, it is the voice that we heard coming from the Bobs in Office Space. Okay, it is nothing to do with soaring rhetoric. It has nothing to do with the glory of the company. It is all very much about the bottom line and trying to put as smiley a face on the bottom line as you can. And I'll say this: the prevailing theory right now amongst my friends in Buffalo, including some folks in the media, is the idea that the communication breakdown between the Pegulas and Jason Botterill, who, by the way, more than earned his way out the door with his performance.
Yes, absolutely.
Let's be honest. But that the communication breakdown between them and Jason Botterill was maybe them saying, hey, we would like you to call everybody and fire them. And Jason Botterill being like, fuck that.
Yeah.
In which case, yeah, and the impression that I think a lot of people are having at this point with Kevin Adams is, well, he's talking, but it's, you know, it's a real ventriloquism situation where it's the Pegula is really saying it.
So Terry Pegula is Billy Flynn and Kevin Adams is Renee Zellweger from Chicago. Is that what you're trying to say?
Yes, that's right.
The thing Emily pointed this out on ESPN and Ice, and I've kind of heard the same thing from some people that know Kevin Adams. Plays the game better than anyone. A real political background player. A real, for lack of a better term, suck up.
Cool.
And not a surprise to see him as the last man standing then. He had aggressively positioned himself to be that, and then he gets the job. Kevin from business administration gets the general manager job.
Without
because
really
he kissed the right asses.
Any NHL front office experience. Now,
Zero.
Let me be clear. Yeah. That he's not walking in off the golf course. He's coached. He's worked on the business side. Like, he has been around, you know, like you said in his interview last night, he's been in the NHL since he was 18 years old, pretty much. So, you know, this isn't some former star player that you're just pulling in out of nowhere and as a figurehead. And maybe he is the guy. I mean, I don't know. Like, maybe there's something to be said for not just the same rotating cast of a half dozen assistant GMs and
four well, that's agents, that's the thing, else. Right? Like the Sabres have tried to be like, oh, we got the next genius AGM. Everybody says this guy's, you know, those guys often don't work out at all, right? And yeah. And you know,
Botterill like, was one of them.
Jason
like Botterill, yeah,
yeah, Paul and Fenton Tim Murray,
like there's yeah.
You can go down the list, like that's fine. But what I'm saying is like. If you want to say, hey, the Sabres were like, oh, you know, we can't keep hiring the hot shit guy who's at the top of everybody's next great GM list. We can't keep hiring those guys. So their decision is, oh, let's instead hire a guy who has no experience in a front office. That should actually work out great.
And it's tough because Kevin Adams, whatever you think of him as the candidate, he deserves to succeed or fail on his own merits. And you know, now that he's in the job, he should get a chance to do the job for a little while before anyone sure. judges him. But that's not what's going to happen in Buffalo. This very much, fair or not, whether there's any truth to it or not, this to people in Buffalo feels like the Pegulas just fired everybody and they kept the one guy who can, you know, if you want to be positive about it, you say the one guy who's has the skill to manage up and keep them happy while he does the job. If you want to be negative, you say that he's the guy who basically the kiss up the teacher's pet who got to position himself to stick around. And he's going to be viewed as this guy who's just an extension of the owners that a whole fan base has already given up on. And so he comes in on day one. I feel like you could have asked Sabres fans who's going to be the next GM, you know, the morning that they made that change, and 100 fans that nobody would have said Kevin Adams. Half of them wouldn't have even known who Kevin Adams was. And it just feels like now they've already made their minds up as to who this guy is. And it's not fair to him, but also this is the situation you're stepping into. And it's tough. And we've seen guys come in and have success when people didn't expect it. We've seen people have success without a lot of NHL experience. It can happen. It's just we're at a point with this fan base where perception is not more important than reality, but perception matters, and the perception right now on this is and the optics is just brutal.
Here's the thing though, like I don't hold it against Kevin Adams that he played the game right. I mean, inherently every job that's a coaching job or a GM job in the National Hockey League is political. You know, it's which assistant coach gets promoted. It's which assistant GM gets promoted. It's who you know. It's the timing of things. It's all political. So if he played the game right to earn this shot, I give him credit for it. And to your point, I also love the idea of thinking outside the box on candidates. There's nothing wrong with that. I want more of it. We can't sit here and lobby for more diversity in hockey operations and then not be like, oh, well, every candidate's got to be, you know, serving 20 years under Jim Rutherford. I mean, like, outside the box is fine. My problem with this is that the entire scope of their search for a general manager was a phone call to Kevin from business administration. That was it. And you look at what the Capitals did when they promoted Brian McClellan. Like, they at least did due diligence to see what other candidates were out there before they decided to look inward and promote somebody who I didn't have faith was going to be able to do what he did, but it ended up being a really good general manager. So,
and there's also a difference between having a succession plan of your assistant GM who's been right there on all the decisions for years and you want to continue that versus, you know, again, Kevin Adams has been working in the organization. But he wasn't part of that front office, so it's not like you're saying, well, we have some continuity here. There's none.
But the real issue is that they've made it clear, to speak to Ryan's point about Kevin Adams being a ventriloquist dummy, they've made it clear that the line of succession is Ralph Krueger coaches the team, Kevin Adams is the GM, but also the Pegulas are also the GM.
Because that's the real issue here, right? I call it rich guy brain, where it's like, well, I'm good at this one thing, and so I must be good at, and you know, I don't know, he's a billionaire, so he quote unquote did something right, not morally, of course, but you know, and it's definitely a situation where, you know, if you want to say, well, look, I'm a huge success in business. That's inarguable. But that doesn't mean you know shit about running a fucking hockey team. Just because you're signing the check, like the thing that that any smart GM would say to an owner Like, you know, if you could be totally honest with them, is just sign the checks and shut the fuck up. Don't – I never want to hear from you. If I have a problem that you need to hear about, I will call you. You don't need to talk to me about this. I'm the guy that you're paying to do this job. But, you know, I think some of that is definitely a situation where, you know, our the GMs we hired in the past have fucked up really bad, done horribly, you know, not traded Ristolainen and – not done anything with the left-wing situation for a decade, whatever. You know, like, you can say that maybe they feel a little burned by all that, and I get that, but Jesus Christ, you know.
Yeah.
Like, the idea that, like, they need to be signing off on every decision because it's economical and stuff, it's like, you know, the problem with the team wasting money is that they're lighting money on fire for all these horrible contracts that any moron, like, who's half-watched 20 Sabres games in the last decade could tell you, oh, they shouldn't have signed that guy.
Yeah, and to have more voices in the front office to opine on these things would be a good thing, but they have no appetite for president of hockey operations. They don't have any appetite for more voices in the room.
Well, Greg, Kim's got it on lock. She's doing a great job with it, and you can tell.
Guy I feel worst for right now, obviously, is Eichel. Like, not only the fortunes of the team, like I wrote about in the column this week, the idea that I don't know if there is another, like, superstar young player that we've ever seen in the league that has had more general managers in his first 5 years in the league than he's had playoff appearances. But that's Jack.
Well, I mean, like, you're crazy. Talking about Taylor Hall. You're talking, you know, like there are guys. There are guys. But, like, the list is short, and, you know, they all play for, like, much maligned, like, made fun of franchises. And the Sabres are now, I think, say what you want about them, Senators make the playoffs sometimes. Senators have a bright future. Like, you can just look at their farm system and their draft picks and that kind of thing and go, yeah, you know, they're going to be competitive in a year or three.
Mm-hmm.
Can you say that about the Sabres, like, with a straight face?
No, you can't. But the thing about Eichel, too, is that, like, I don't know if you guys picked up on this in the last week on social media, but there's a lot of Sabres fans that just outright say that Eichel got Botterill fired. And the reason they say it is, one, he's already got the reputation from what happened to Housley. And two, the timing that the Pegulas had in firing Botterill, where Kim gives this full-throated vote of confidence to their general manager. 2 days later, Eichel has that press conference where he talks about how fucking miserable he is and how pessimistic he is about the, you know, the direction of the team. And then 3 weeks later after that, Botterill gets fired. Like something changed. So the perception is that Jack did that, but the perception that Jack did that comes directly from the fucking Pegulas changing their tune on a guy they literally said would be their general manager next season and putting their star player in a position where he looks like the asshole. So I feel fucking horrible for Jack because it's his own owners that did this to him to have people say this shit about him right now.
Yeah, it's the classic thing of get him the fuck out of there. Please, like, somebody come along and save poor Jack Eichel from having to deal with this shit. Because he doesn't, you know, like, did he get Phil Housley fired? Maybe, but should Phil Housley have been fired anyway? Yeah, same thing with Botterill. And, you know, like, I don't know that Jack Eichel has that kind of sway where he can call up Kim Pegula and go, man, we gotta do something about this fucking GM. But at the same time, you know, something did need to be done about the GM. What's bad about this is now everybody's mad at Jack Eichel because, like, everybody in Rochester got fired and nobody there deserved it. And, like,
that's incredible.
Jack Eichel, Jack Eichel's never been to Rochester, would never play in Rochester because, you know, like, he's never been an AHL, like, he was maybe an AHL quality player when he was 17. You know, there was never a point where you looked at this kid and went, oh yeah, this is a guy who needs one or two seasons in the A. That's not how it was ever going to work. So, like, what does Jack Eichel care what the fuck goes on in Rochester?
Yeah, it's crazy.
No, it's ugly, and it's, you know, that whole theory that Eichel was behind it is probably untrue, but not unreasonable, just given the timing of everything. It's not hard to imagine a situation where the Pegulas see that interview and call him up and go, wait a second, are things okay? And he goes, you know what? No, actually, they're not okay. I can't believe you guys are standing pat again. Is there any evidence whatsoever that happened? No, none at all. But this is what happens when you constantly seem to be making decisions for your franchise based on which way the wind's blowing on any given day. You open yourself up to all this nonsense that comes from fans and people like us and all the rest of it. And it sucks, man. I like Sabres fans a lot. That's a good fan base that deserves way more than what they're getting.
The thing I'd say about this, though, is that if they're doing this as a peon to Jack Eichel, probably don't want to fire Steve Greeley, Boston University's own, as assistant general manager.
Yeah.
If you're really
probably,
trying to do Eichel,
probably don't
Eichel
want
solid.
To do a lot of things. But yeah, here we are.
That's right.
It's incredible. I feel for you, Sabres fans. I feel horrible. And in February, I wrote that the Sabres were the league's biggest disaster. They found a way to be an even bigger one.
They were like, we'll show him.
Yeah, they really showed me. Yeah,
they really seared this one into the fucking ditch.
Yeah, I'm the Jack Eichel in this situation. If I didn't write that shit in February, then none of this would happen.
Everything's fine, yeah.
But listen, I mean, I don't know. I don't know what to tell you. You know, hope for the best. Hope that Kevin Adams is a genius. Put on some, you know, some soothing music. But if you want to do that, by the way, I think the best way to listen to it is with Raycon's earbuds. The everyday E25 earbuds from our friends at Raycon. I had to find the ad copy, sir. You know, whether you're working from home or working on your fitness, you want what you're listening to be what you're listening to, not what everybody else is listening to. Everyone needs a great pair of wireless earbuds. But before you go dropping hundreds of dollars on a pair, you need to check out the wireless earbuds from Raycon. The newest model, the Everyday E25 earbuds, are their best ones yet, with 6 hours of playtime, seamless Bluetooth pairing, more bass, and a more compact design that gives you a nice noise-isolating fit. I wear them whenever I work out. I've talked about the fact that, you know, other Bluetooth earphones that are wireless don't necessarily fit my ears the right way, and I always feel like they're about to fall out. I never have that problem with the Raycon earbuds, because not only are they a snug fit, but they also give you a lot of different options for the little rubber things you put on them to make them fit your ears perfectly. They're great, and the quality of the audio is great. Never had an issue with them. Fantastic product. We use them to record Mise-en-Pod, in fact. Ruby and I each take an earbud and then talk to Ryan about Top Chef. Celebrities like Snoop Dogg and Cardi B use them. Celebrities like me and Down Goes Brown use them. Do you use them too, Lambert? I don't want to
leave
you out
of
the celebrity mix. Yeah. Okay, Lambert too. Now's the time to get the latest and greatest from Raycon. Get 15% off your order at buyraycon.com. That's BUYRAYCON.com. But you need to put /puck after it. So, buyraycon.com/puck for 15% off your Raycon wireless earbuds. We heartily, heartily endorse this product in ways that maybe we don't heartily endorse other advertisers in the past. Raycon's the shit. You should get them. You're going to love them. Briefly on hubs and stuff, because there's a chance that by the time you hear this, they'll have announced the hubs. There's a chance it might get kicked the next week. I had someone at the league shoot down the idea that if it's not a Canadian city, it'll be Chicago. But by golly, it does kind of seem like that's where we're headed, unless they end up going Vegas, LA, which I guess is another possibility. But it would just seem to behoove them to have a team in the central time zone or the eastern time zone to stagger games throughout the day rather than having them both be on Pacific time. That's just me.
I think that's right, yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and clearly they want to go to Canada, but there's issues there to figure out as far as getting across the border and what the rules are going to be. And they're pretty openly and publicly leaning on Canadian government and officials to loosen those rules, and so far that hasn't happened, so we'll see. It probably will.
I had someone tell me, and I didn't realize this was the case, that if you fly anywhere on a commercial airline to get back to your home city, you have to quarantine for 14 days. Yep. It's not simply just flying back from overseas, which is, I mean, now we see the timing on this thing a little bit more starkly, which is that, you know, you announced the return to training facilities as a way to be like, all right, everybody kind of start coming back, because they ain't going to be a situation
I mean, look at the NBA, right? They have a phase one, and phase one applies to only one team, and that's the Toronto Raptors, because they've got to get across and get back. And I mean, we said it a million times, but every time you start talking about this stuff, just the sheer number of details and logistics that you wouldn't even think of that pop up is like, whoever puts this together, if it works, is going to earn their paychecks over the next few months. Cause it's every time I think they've got it figured out, there's 10 more things pop up, and it's crazy.
Yeah. It is like whack-a-mole in some cases. I think Toronto's a real good site if they can pull it off. They obviously know the logistics there from using it for the World Cup hub, Eastern time zone city. And the other thing, too, is like all this talk about families and such. I mean, at least you're – when I did the story this week about players that are having – where their partners are pregnant and they're going to have kids – in July, mm-hmm. AKA, we really thought we nailed the timing.
Yeah, which led to Mark Lazarus with one of the all-timer quotes.
Oh, yeah.
There's a whole lot of romance going on in November, I think was the quote. One of those words may have been something
Brilliant.
Else, but yeah.
So one of the players told me that it's not so much it's very much the ability to see your family. Like, that is grade A number one thing that the NHLPA is trying to figure out right now with the NHL. But in some cases, it's simply just being in the vicinity of your family so you don't have to hop on a plane if there's an emergency. And with the large number of people that play in this league from Ontario – if you put the one of the hubs in Toronto, I wonder if that doesn't help ease that a little bit. I wonder if that doesn't offer a little peace of mind that, you know, you could have your family stay in your summer home or with your family or what have you, like your parents or what have you, so you're not a plane ride away in case something goes wrong. I wonder if that's the case insofar as the family aspect of
it. I've said it a million times, but it's like, yeah, okay, I get it. You want to see your family, but do you also want to be in the NHL and like do the playoffs? Because those are like a binary option at this point. The idea that everybody's going to be like, we're going to bring Kalen and Kellen and Kylan and Curlin and my nice wife, and they're all gonna live with us in the big hotel. Like, what are you fucking talking about? And you can't come and go as you please. How the idea that you're going to be able to both have your family with you and play these games, it doesn't make sense.
I think it makes sense for later in the playoffs. I mean, I don't think it makes sense at the start, but the idea that they can't see their family throughout the entirety of a 2.5 month run, it's fucking preposterous. Yeah.
Well, then don't fucking have it then. Don't do the playoffs then if you want to hang out with your family.
Right? I mean, this is
right. Well, that's what I'm saying.
Hell on forward, and so they've got to figure out a way to do it. And again, this is how do you balance this? I have no idea what the right answer is, because you're both absolutely right. On the one hand, like, people just can't be coming and going. That's the whole point of trying to do this in isolation. On the other hand, you could tell someone they can't see their family for 3 months. Half of these guys have got new kids on the way. People could get sick in their family. Like, it's that doesn't work. So
what's the ask then? Like, you go, well, okay, the family, they can come, but they have to show up 2 weeks early.
Yeah.
Because, but by then you also might be eliminated from the playoffs. So they just like hung out in a hotel and traveled for no reason at all.
Yep. But I mean, yeah, that's what they're trying to figure out. But I think that, yeah, look, we could try to invent this binary decision where it's either you play or you don't see your family for 2.5 months. But they don't accept that. So
okay, I don't know what to tell them then. Like, well, like people don't accept that the Earth is round. Some people, you ever hear about these guys? And so
And one of those guys is the NBA's most important labor leader right now. So everything's cool because Kyrie's got this. No, I listen. I understand the cold-hearted fantasy sports approach to these things.
It's not being cold-hearted. This is the reality that, like, you're gonna have these people come into this bubble, and you're gonna go, okay, you can't. This X number of you aren't gonna see your family until you're eliminated again, and that could be 2 weeks, and that could be 3 months from now. We just can't say definitively one way.
That's where you get into what Greg kind of said, where maybe it's all right. You know what? The first two rounds, you're not going to be able to see your family because we've only got so much space for all of you and all the teams and everything. But as teams get eliminated and space starts to clear up, we can start bringing in immediate family. We can start bringing in whatever it is, so that way, by the time if you're in month three of a 3 month run, you haven't been completely isolated that whole time. I think something like that could make sense.
Yeah, it's like Survivor. It's like you get to a certain amount of contestants left, and then their family comes on the island, and you can
exactly.
do a challenge.
And then
challenge
you have a challenge,
them.
And whoever right. wins gets to play in that next Stanley Cup game.
Right.
And it's
precisely.
Fine.
Now, but Ryan, like, you have to. Part of the whole reason that these guys are going to come back is to give them reasons to come back, right? And in some cases, it'll be financial enticement through CBA negotiations. In some cases, it'll be the perks of living in a hub or whatever the fuck. In some cases, it'll just be a shot at winning. But one of the things that these guys want is, if they win, for it not to be fucking weird. To have the experience that we've all seen on the ice of celebrating with their families.
Yeah, it's going to be weird. I don't know what these yeah. like. Look, I don't want it to be weird, but well, I mean, tough shit. It's in the middle of a pandemic. Like, it's going to be weird no matter what. There's no fans in the building. Whatever you want to say. Oh, that's really weird. I don't know how I feel.
But you're
about
talking
it.
About athletes that can't conceive of the idea where they skate the cup and then don't see their kid.
Well,
next.
Fucking start conceiving of it, dude. Like, that's. I don't understand. Like, yeah, okay, it's tough. It takes an adjustment, whatever. Like, this is what you have to do to get the Stanley Cup award. That you're not okay. You're not in Disney World where you can have, you know, 500 people in your traveling party because they have 50 hotels that aren't being used.
Let me proffer this then, because I had somebody in the league say this to me this week. How's it going to look in October? When we have these guys playing in a bubble, when we're like, can't see your families, and college football is playing to capacity, and the NFL is playing to capacity, and baseball's back, and they've got fans in the stadiums, and we're playing in a hermetically sealed bubble. How's that going to feel for these guys?
I think that's an insanely optimistic view of what's going to happen with college football and baseball and the NFL.
Have you seen bars? Like, you don't think Florida's going to have people at football games?
I think freaking the latest stuff I've seen is like, that's when the second wave is going to really hit, because all these people are going to bars already. Like, that's the fucking problem, is that, like, I hate the term flatten the curve, because I think it sounds stupid, but like, the curve hasn't been flattened. Like, Texas has, I think, the same number of cases like active right now as like basically the entire Northeast and into like Ohio and Pennsylvania and maybe like West Virginia. That, like, that's how bad it is in some parts of the country. And the idea that, well, shit, like, you know, all the bars are open. I don't know. Is it worth it to, like, maybe die because you want to see the fucking Tampa Bay Buccaneers? I guess that's a call you get to make. But if you want to do things safely, then tough shit.
Oh, you're preaching to the choir.
Doesn't sound like it.
No, but I mean, but like, we could all sit here and say the logical things and say the things that the epidemiologists are saying, but we're on one side of an equation, and the other side of the equation is playing out in real time, which is that a lot of people don't give a shit, and teams inherently are businesses, and leagues inherently are businesses. And if they can collect, 20, 30, 40,000 don't give a shits, to start spending money again in Stadia, they're going to do it. Because now you have, like, the fucking governor of Florida is not going to tell the universities or the Dolphins or the fucking Bucks with Tom Brady not to bring fans into the building. That's fucking Pollyanna to think that's not going to happen.
Again, but again, like, if this is about, hey, I want to see my kid, I want to put my kid in the Stanley Cup when we win it. I want to fucking have the nice photo op on the ice. Like, I obviously get why you want to do that, but is that worth, my kid might get sick because he got on a fucking plane to Florida with a bunch of dipshits who are like, I don't need to wear a mask. This is all Bill Gates shit. Like, fucking Pavel Datsyuk flying in. We're all getting chipped or whatever. Like, you know, if you want to put your kids through that, you know what? Go nuts. But that does,
congratulations, by the way, to the rest of society figuring out what we figured out on Puck Daddy, like, in 2010?
Yeah.
That Pavel Datsyuk is one of the most dynamic two-way players in the history of hockey and also a religious wingnut.
Yeah. Amazing.
So good job on that, everybody. He's following a priest that looks like Rasputin into a monastery to get away from
microchipping. That guy wishes he looks like Rasputin. He wishes, dude.
Okay, he's cosplaying as Rasputin.
Yeah, okay. Now we're talking.
I don't know, man. I think, listen, I understand what you're saying. I think, in theory, a lot of people would like this to be a binary choice. I'm just saying, from the player's perspective, it's not. So if you want them to come back and play and finish the season, you have to come up with a solution.
I take your point, Greg, about college football, NFL. The comparison here is going to be the NBA. That's what I'm looking at. If I'm a player, because the NFL is that starts in September. It's a different league. College, same day. The NBA is going through, those players are going through pretty much the closest possible thing to what I'm going through if I'm a hockey player. So I want to see what they get. I want to see how they're treated. And that's where it's going to be. If you say, I can't see my family, but I see LeBron James hanging out with his wife and kids, that's where we're going to have a real problem. And that's where there's going to be big questions. And I'm almost surprised that there hasn't been more, at least public, scenes of the NHL and NBA working a little more hand in hand to try to make sure that they're a unified front here. I'm sure the NBA doesn't care what the NHL does. It's a one-way street because one of these sports is a big league and one of them isn't. But that's what I'm looking at if I'm a player. I'm not too worried about what Tom Brady gets in September. I want to know what's happening with LeBron in July at the same time I'm packing up to go and report to duty.
And obviously the NHLP is really going to keep an eye on how the NBA handles side pieces and groupies. That obviously will be the the legislation that they're going to follow.
The NBA is like setting from what I read, is setting up basically like a snitch line where it's like if you see
if you see a guy
out and about in Orlando,
that's going to go over great.
And by the way, can we just discuss that the NBA is going to have a snitch line for people to call up if they see players violating quarantine? But 5 months later or 6 months later, the NHL doesn't have this coach was racist to me hotline set up yet.
Yeah.
But the NHL is going to set up a line where you can call if you hear one of the players say the word I in an interview.
I think my favorite thing about this is, of course, the NBA is going to restart in Disney World and they're going to stay in like the Grand Floridian and all the nice hotels there and stuff like that. And also, like, the plan is for to keep these guys entertained. They're going to bring in bands and DJs and show them movies that aren't even in theaters yet. And the NHL is going to be like, we can get you half off a Disney Plus subscription.
Among the perks or restrictions inside the NBA bubble will be that they will have, of course, DJs, ping pong. They will have pedicures. They will have hair braiders on site. A few items of note in the plan that they have: no doubles during ping pong, only singles. Can't play with somebody next to you in ping pong. If they're across the table, okay. No doubles in ping pong. Each deck of cards is disposed of after use. So in your high-stakes Michael Jordan-esque poker games, you get done playing, and you burn the cards afterwards. No caddies during golfing. No sharing of clubs and balls. And no headsets allowed during video gaming is the other thing, too. So, good way to protect against lice as well, now that I think about it. So good on them. But yeah, that's part of the NBA's restart plan. Amazing stuff from the NBA this week. Like, can you imagine being an NHL player and seeing the NBA being like, well, we're going to try to figure out how to facilitate these DJ parties and comedy sets from like Kevin Hart. And meanwhile, you're like, I wonder if we're going to Edmonton. It's fucking crazy.
Yeah. At night, the NBA players will get to go on Space Mountain as many times in a row as they want. And in the NHL, it's like,
yeah.
We can get you a PlayStation 2. How's that sound?
Yeah. Right. They're like, do you guys like Jerry D? Yeah, cool. Is he here? No, he's not. But we have a VHS of his special from 2004.
The NBA teams are going to be eating at like the exclusive tiki restaurant at Walt Disney World. And the NHL is like, well, we've taken over a Harvey's in Edmonton for you.
Hey, now, don't go knocking Harvey's. That'd be all right. I do love that the NBA did the hotels based on seating. Like, it was like the top seeds are in one hotel and down.
That's cool.
And I wish, apparently they didn't, but I wish they had done like 5-star hotel for like the Lakers and then like 4 stars for the middle of the pack. And then one of the value resorts for the lower. That would have been perfect. That would have been so good if they'd done it that way. But
did it by caste system?
Yeah, exactly. Like, you should have won a few more games if you wanted like, if you wanted the outdoor pool. You got you get what you get.
Love it. Couple more items before we get to a quiz this week. Eugene Melnick gets a full-throated clarification and apology from the Ottawa Sun. This is a story we talked about last episode. And to your credit, Sean, I think you were sort of cautious about trying to...
I got made fun of for having too many caveats in my description of the story. Because
we're not getting sued, baby.
Yeah, that's right.
So it was a developing, ongoing story, and we hadn't heard Eugene Melnick's side yet. And apparently, I found it odd that 2 days in, we hadn't heard anything. Apparently, the answer to that was that they were working behind the scenes, presumably with the lawyers, to extract a full-on apology from the Ottawa Sun, which, you know, in journalism, that's a big deal. Like, it's not incredibly uncommon to have, you know, to for the subject of a piece to go and say, you know, you didn't include this. Okay, well, we'll clarify. We'll add an editor's note. We'll do this or that. To take the whole thing down and put an apology is pretty much as close to a total victory as you can have. So fair's fair. You know, Eugene Melnick, this was a big story. He took a lot of negative publicity, obviously, for it. He has been, at least for this specific piece of it, apparently, as we understand, pretty much completely vindicated, at least as far as what was in that Ottawa Sun piece.
It seems, and also the Ottawa Sun kind of seems a little shady not having contacted them at all about any of this stuff, which is, make the effort so... You know, your reporting even looks a little bit balanced. The one thing I'll say that I come back to, which really wasn't covered in the apology or in Melnick's comment about it, I'm still trying to figure out if you are somebody who donated to the Sens Foundation, like there's a raffle or something at a game. Like, are you assuming that money is going to organ donation charities? Or are you assuming that it's going to help the community in Ottawa? Now, it's not to say that the community in Ottawa doesn't need organ donation. I'm sure there are people that do. I just think that, like, if a team has an organization that's branded to that organization, like, if I go give money to, the Rangers Fund, right, I'm assuming that money will be given to something that's affecting a good portion of the people in New York City, not necessarily the whim of the owner. I don't know.
Yeah, I just the thing affecting weird. People in New York City is not enough recognition of who is walking here.
That's right.
Yeah. I don't know. So anyway, it certainly still feels like there's maybe more twists and turns on this story. Certainly,
sure
just
does.
As far as the Sens Foundation, we don't know what's happening with them or what happened there. But at least, you know, this is one of those things, right? The bad information gets on the front page and gets 20,000 retweets, and sometimes the correction does not. So that is, if you were somebody who read that story in the Sun a week ago and were like, holy crap, Eugene Melnick's the devil, go back and read the correction now and readjust your opinions as necessary.
Yeah, indeed. The Detroit Red Wings have a documentary about their season that they're going to be putting out. That's exciting.
Speaking of apologies.
Why would you do – like, okay, I get it. You put a bunch of money and time and effort into getting this all together. But around game like 15, don't you go like, well, we've lost like 14 in a row here. We're pretty bad. No, that's not true. They started 3-1 and everybody – I remember everybody in Detroit was like, they thought we were going to be bad this year. And then they dropped like 11 or 12 in a row, something like that. So, like, you know, they're it should have been pretty obvious right away. This team sucks, and nobody's going to want to watch. What if you're a Red Wings fan? Do you want a look inside, like, just, you know, fucking a shot of Jimmy Howard looking like Private Pyle right before he goes and shoots somebody?
I can't imagine. It could be fascinating. Like, if they did this, like, in a certain way, this could be absolutely fascinating. Like, to actually see a behind the scenes of a bad team struggling and people concerned for their jobs.
Sure.
But I have zero faith that it's.
Yeah, no, this is put out by the Red Wings organization. They're going to be actually, the future looks pretty bright, guys.
Yeah, exactly. So I don't know. It's a weird thing, but I'm holding out hope against hope that they're going to do this in a cool way, but I'm not. I don't think so.
I mean, yeah, you'd need an outside force to come in to do it, and this seems like an inside job. Like,
this is gonna take a lot of creative editing. let's just say,
yeah, like, there's something to be said for having somebody come in with unfettered access to a disastrous season. But it could be like,
I just hope it's 82 games of just like Jimmy Howard talking like Michael Jordan in The Last Dance, being like, and I felt like the Predators disrespected me, so that's when I knew I had, and then just like
giving up five later, goals,
him just like him getting pulled and being like, oh, okay, well, next time though.
Yeah, it's going to be a documentary like that one that they did on Documentary Now, where they did the parody of the making of the Company cast recording, where the musical closes as you're doing the documentary about the musical.
Yes,
it's pretty much the Detroit Red Wings at this point. Roman Polak may never come back to the NHL.
So that was initially what was reported, though. And then there was a big wave of like, no, he's coming back to Dallas. 100%, he definitely is. And it's like, I read that quote, and it sounds like he might not.
Yeah.
It was really weird.
Because it was basically what he said was, well, he signed in the KHL, right? I think.
He signed with a Czech League team.
Signed with a Czech League team, signed a three-year deal, but it was – so first you hear like Roman Polak signs for the Czech League team, which makes you go, oh, wow, he's done in Dallas. And then it was, okay, but the deal says that he can still come back and finish the season with the Stars in the playoffs when the season resumes. But then there was like, oh, but also he says he doesn't want to do that. And he's basically saying like, I will if you make me, but I really – I'm done as far as the NHL. So it doesn't sound like he wants to come back, which kind of makes him the first player to publicly say that, but also not really. Like, this isn't the scenario that we envisioned of a player saying like, no, I'm not putting my health at risk, I'm not doing this. But it very much sounds like, if you're a Dallas Stars fan, maybe don't count on Roman Polak being part of the playoff roster, because he really didn't sound like a guy who wanted to be part of that.
Yeah, and also I wouldn't worry about it. It's Roman Polak, 2020.
Yeah, so you're gonna have to go find yourself another eighth defenseman. But no, I agree. I think his chatter was a lot more of the coming back and playing under these conditions is bullshit sort of talk rather than anything else, and seemed pretty content to stay overseas. And I wonder if he's going to be alone. I wonder if there are other, you know, 17% of the league went overseas during the pause. I wonder if there's other players that will be hesitant to come back and play under these conditions. I mean, the NHL has been pretty loosey-goosey with the idea that there's not going to be penalties for people that don't come back.
Yeah.
So it's, I think it's on the table, and I wonder who else is going to take the chance. Hockey Hall of Fame. Two big things coming up next week. Draft lottery next Friday, where we get to see if any of the placeholders
one of six.
Get to finish in the get to finish in the top three. That'll be fun. A lot of fun. I'm actually probably looking the most anticipated draft lottery since the Connor McDavid lottery by far.
Oh sure.
And so that's one thing. But also next week, Hockey Hall of Fame announcements. The Exalted Executive Committee apparently meeting remotely via. I would love to see a Zoom call and see the camera positions of all of the people on the executive committee as they try to figure out technology. And we're going to get a new class for the Hockey Hall of Fame. Obviously, the head of the class is Jerome Iginla. And he will be a first ballot Hall of Famer without question. Then it gets a little interesting.
Gets very interesting.
Who do y'all else do you think's coming into this, this Hockey Hall of Fame class? Because here's the thing, real quick. I went back in the column this week and looked at other recent first ballot Hall of Famers. Okay? Now, Jerome Iginla definitely fits into this purview. You're talking about... let's go back to 2009. Brett Hull, Brian Leetch, Luke Robitaille, Steve Yzerman, Ed Belfour, Joe Sakic, Matt Sundin, Chelios Niedermeyer, Forsberg, Hasek, Modano, Fedorov, Lidstrom, Pronger, Solane, Brodeur, and Marty St. Louis. Now, Iginla's name fits snugly in there. Does Marian Hossa's name as a first ballot guy?
Hossa's the other one that of the new candidates, with apologies to Shane Doan, who feels like a potential first-year inductee.
Oof.
It's a tough... I mean, I've for years kind of been a Marian Hossa Hall of Fame skeptic, in the sense that I look at his body of work and I go, are we sure that this guy is the slam dunk, no doubt about it, you are a total and complete moron if you don't think he's a Hall of Famer candidate that seems to have emerged as a consensus? But that does certainly seem to have emerged as a consensus. Like, I don't feel like I'm winning this argument. I'm not even saying he shouldn't be in. I'm just, I do find it strange that at some point we just flipped a switch and a guy who's never won an award, has been an all-star one time in his entire career, became like almost an Iginla level sure thing. But it feels like maybe not on the first time through, but it seems pretty inevitable.
Yeah, I don't have a list of people who are eligible this year in front of me, but if Iginla doesn't make it on the first ballot, like, we riot. That's
I don't think you have to worry about that. I think he's definitely getting in.
We did a thing at the Athletic, and I'm not going to get into the details, but we have, like, one of our writers is Ed Tuhachik, who was on the Hall of Fame committee for like 15 years. He knows exactly how it all works, and so he sort of put us through an exercise where we did our own Hall of Fame vote following the exact process that the committee does, from nomination through to how the ballots work and all that. And I got to say, and the piece is going up next week, so I'm not going to get into who did or didn't make it or how it went. It was fascinating. As somebody who has, from the sidelines, had lots to say about who got in and who didn't and how the process works, it was really fascinating to actually go through it and see how it works from the inside. And it's
well,
interesting.
Without getting into the details, what was like the most eye-opening thing from the process for you?
I mean, and I should know this if I had really thought it through, but just the fact that there's 18 people on the committee. Everybody can nominate one player in each category. So you can nominate one male player, one female, one builder. Obviously, not everybody does nominate a different person in each of those categories. But for the men's side, you're limited to 18 nominations. So right away, there's a lot of names that you would think of as potential Hall of Famers that don't even get discussed. They don't even come up because they're not nominated. Like, we had got, you know, once I saw the final, because our list was, I would assume, probably a lot like what the list is for the real committee every year. There were some guys that were just obvious. Of course, we have to talk about this guy candidate. There were others that were sort of borderline, and then there were a few that were kind of like, I don't think this person's rises to that level, but somebody wants to throw their name out. They want to talk about them. They want to at least have the discussion. It left a lot of people out. Like, there were a good four or five candidates that I would consider, you know, potential Hall of Famers that didn't even get discussed. And then, you know, the way the voting works, you're sort of, there's multiple ballots, so you can, it felt, you know, it felt very different voting in the men's and the women's, because in the women's there's fewer candidates, so you may only have one ballot, so you got to really nail it the first right. time, whereas with the men, you can kind of go, I'll put these ones down, but then if I find out that this guy is like one or two votes away on the second ballot, maybe I'll shift a vote over to him if I think he should be in or not. It was just really interesting. We spent a lot of time on it this week, and I'll recommend that people check out the piece, and the results were interesting, and I'm curious to see how people think we did versus what the whatever the real committee comes up with.
Yeah, and now we know why Pierre Turgeron doesn't make it, right?
That's right.
Yeah. Okay. The other name. I don't think Host is the first ballot guy. I do think that if you look back at their voting history, the selection committee has been pretty diligent as far as the like all time legendary Mount Rushmore type guys versus that next tier down. And you know, a guy like Brendan Shanahan was in that next tier down. You know, there's some really good players that were in that next tier down that had to wait a year. Joe Newendike, who's right around the same number of points.
Basically, all of these super elite no-brainers, right. And Matt Sundin got in.
Yeah, right, yeah. Yeah, and you know, like, again, like, you look at that, listen to that list I just mentioned, and it even goes back further than that to other guys. That's a lot of Hart trophies and Conn Smythes and scoring titles. Absolutely. And things like that. And Hossa was an award finalist once, and it was for the Calder. So, like, mm-hmm. I just don't think he necessarily rises to that level. But he's a Hall of Famer. I don't think there's a question about that. So when you're that certain about it, it wouldn't shock me to see him get in. Now, the other names – there's three other names I'm really interested in this next vote. One of them is Daniel Alfredson, who obviously yep. has been on this ballot. I think it's his fourth year. There's questions now about whether he's Hall of Very Good or Hall of Fame.
And Daniel Alfredson was a guy that I remember when, you know, being here in Ottawa, when he first became eligible, there was a lot of talk of he's a Hall of Famer, but not a first ballot guy.
Right.
And then the first ballot came and went and he didn't make it. And now we're several ballots in and it's suddenly starting to, it seems like that support is starting to waver a little bit.
Yeah, and again, like Aginla, incredibly nice guy and fantastic ambassador for the sport. So he has that going for him. Mm-hmm. The other two names that I find really interesting are names that I think their lots in life changed based off of last year's class, right? So when Vaclav Nedimansky gets in,
yep.
I think that bolsters Alex McGillney's case in a pretty mm-hmm. major way. Not only McGillney being a Triple Gold Club member, having top 40 points per game percentage of all time, but also like his backstory of being the first Soviet to defect to the NHL, mm-hmm. like and a very important player and an insanely good player, and yes. and I think that his case, you know, looks better.
And the thing with him was always, okay, great player. Did he do it long enough? He didn't get to 500 right. goals. Do we factor in the historic importance? And we weren't sure. And then Nedimansky comes along, and they basically explicitly say in his induction that part of this is because of his historical importance. So does that then, you know, in theory, swings the door wide open for Alexander McGillney? But we'll see.
It
voters
should,
hate Soviet we'll players, though, man.
But they're coming around on it. I mean, when you put in Nedimansky, like, you know, I think you have to look at that and say, all right, well, maybe the door swung open a little bit more for – because the complexion and the configuration of the selection committee have certainly changed over the years. So we'll see. The other guy, obviously, is Rod Brind'Amour, and this is a real fascinating one because, you know, much like in the Baseball Hall of Fame where certain guys get in and then new benchmarks are set – and now that opens the door for a whole other class of players. I think Guy Carboneau getting in I mean, fuck, if you put Guy Carboneau in the Hall of Fame and you don't put Rod Brind'Amour in the Hall of Fame, what the fuck are you doing?
The real question is, will he take a night away from his team like Jerry York did? A freaking idiot. Yeah, remember this? Remember everybody got mad at Jerry York?
Yeah, that's right. Just slammed for it.
I'll say this. We had a discuss, and this maybe won't even be part of whatever goes out next week, but in our little pretend committee, we had to have a discussion on Guy Carboneau, and does Guy Carboneau change the bar for other defensive players? And it's not just Brind'Amour. There's other guys we could go down the list, other Selke-winning defensive players, or do we just consider Guy Carboneau an outlier, a miss, and we don't really factor it in for future, and we just go like Guy Carboneau was a bad pick, and what's done is done, and you know it's now, easier this, obviously for us to say that because we're
is this a discussion amongst the Athletic voters, or is this an actual discussion that the executive committee might have? Because that's fucking bonkers.
No, that's the thing. The executive committee wouldn't have that discussion because they're the ones who just put him in last year.
But that's crazy.
You know, it was kind of but if I guess what I would say is if you're gonna make the case for Brind'Amour or whoever else. You know, Yeri Laitinen maybe should get some consideration if he was the Guy Carboneau of his generation.
He was.
And guys like that, I would say you got to hope you get in there quickly, because I think even a few years from now and maybe a little bit more turnover on the committee, suddenly they start looking at Guy Carboneau and going, we missed, guys. We whiffed on that one and we're not
going to. Can you imagine that's actually how the executive committee work, where they're like, you know what, Rogie Vachon, we just wanted to make an old man smile.
Yeah.
Like, could you imagine that shit?
Yeah.
God.
So, I don't know. Admitting you were wrong is not really a great, a well-known trait among 200 hockey men, but
right,
maybe. They may we'll have see. To. So it's interesting. And then you got, you know, all the other names of all the pick whoever the guy that you have thought should be in the Hall of Fame for years and years. You know, Jeremy Roenick, did he hurt his case with the stuff this year, and you go down, I mean, Theo Fleury, Doug Wilson, Curtis Joseph, Keith Tkachuk. There's a lot of guys. There's a lot of names. And like I said, make your own list of names that you wouldn't be completely blown away if they got in the Hall of Fame. It's more than 18, which means some of those guys are not even going to come up for discussion, which is pretty amazing. And that's even before you get into, you know, the women's side, I don't think is we didn't have a super tough time with, but the builder category, holy crap. I mean, you're
right.
That is just,
you guys put Bill Daly in, is that right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Absolutely. I was going to say the only intrigue for me is whether or not the guy whose name's on the NHL site for the Athletic pushed Doug Wilson through the vote for the Hockey Hall of Fame. Cause fucking Pierre is the biggest Doug Wilson mark in hockey media. And that's been his cause for decades to get Doug Wilson.
I will tell you that Pierre was not on the committee, so
damn it.
Adjust your expectations accordingly. But.
Well, there goes your Bill Daly pick.
So good, jeez.
Don Waddell still on the table. So finally this week, Lambert has a quiz cooked up for us.
I have two.
Oh,
you get to choose. Based on nothing but the names.
Wait, is this the quiz? Just us picking
that's
the
right.
quiz?
I came up with two in the last week. One's called What's Your Number? And one's called 20 Questions. What are you? Which do you think you want to play more?
All right, so let's discuss this, Sean.
Sorry. What's your number?
20 Questions. Now, this could be like an entire quiz about Ryan Kessler.
See, that's the thing. I need a quiz about Phil Kessel, but I'm worried I'm going to like.
Oh, you're right. It probably is about Phil Kessler. But no. It's Lambert. He's obvious. It's obviously about Phil Kessel. I mean, I think the fact that we are both very intrigued by what the fuck it is kind of should be our guiding light on this, I think.
Yeah, I'm good with that.
And maybe we should just pick that to find out. So we'll take the red pill. We'll go 20 questions.
Okay, 20 questions it is. The way this game works is in honor of Phil Kessel, who this season became another player who hit 1,000 games in the NHL. Mm-hmm. This is a quiz about guys who have played at least 1,000 games in the NHL. There are 348 of them in the history of the league. And I am going to pull up a random number generator here.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to go to that player's hockey reference page. And this is sorted in order of number of games played. So,
number of games played. At least 1,000. So this is get players that played 1,000 games in the NHL.
Yes. Or more, obviously.
Or more. Okay.
All right. And so if you play 1,000 games, you're probably a pretty well-known guy, right? Like for two hockey writers, anyway.
To be determined, but yes. Yeah.
I just pulled up a guy, and based on what's on his hockey reference page, I just want you to ask me yes or no questions and see if in 20 questions you can figure out who this guy is.
And is this Greg and I working together?
Yep. Although, yes and no. First to two will win it.
All right.
But...
So do we go back and forth with the questions?
Yes.
Or how does it work?
Yep.
Okay.
And I'm going to get out a pen so I can keep track of how many questions have been asked. Where did I put my pen? There, this one will work great. Okay. Sean, why don't you go ask the first question?
Sure.
Yeah, he definitely won the last one.
Is this player a Hall of Famer?
No.
Oh. Now, if I ask a question and then you answer it, do I have then a chance to guess?
Yes, you do.
Okay. Is this player on the Pittsburgh Penguins?
Not currently.
Okay.
Let's put it that way.
Okay.
That was a weirdly specific question.
I thought
it was Phil Kessel.
Yeah. Is this player active?
No.
All right.
Is this player American?
This player is not American.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
Did this player ever win an award?
Let's see. Yes. He won one award in his career.
It could be the King Clancy Community Service Award, though. is this player has this did this okay ha, did this player retire within the last 5 years?
No.
Oh. All right.
Did this player at any point in their career play for the Toronto Maple Leafs?
Yes.
Uh-oh. You got a guess?
That's 7, by the way.
Yeah. No, I'm still collecting information. Is there a penalty for an incorrect guess or?
No.
Okay. I do not have a guess yet.
Oh boy. What's this player's name? No, kidding. was this player a defenseman?
No.
Did this player have over 1,000 career points?
No.
Oh, wow. All right. Did this player have over 300 career goals?
No.
Okay.
That's 10.
That's okay. All right. Halfway there. We're... Okay. Did this player was this player's last season in the 1900s?
No.
Oh man. All right. Was this player a goalie?
No.
Okay. So no, he's a forward.
Oh, it could be a rover.
Oh, come on.
All right, so not a goalie.
They played like 20 games a season back then. You'd have to play quite a long time to...
All Was this player a center primarily?
No.
Mm.
Ooh, boy. Okay.
On the winger. All right. You have a guess?
I might have a guess. I'm just looking at... I'm going back to my list. Non-American. Oh, the award is going to screw that up. But it's a winger who didn't score a ton, played for the Leafs at some point, played past 2000. Is this player Gary Roberts?
No.
Okay.
Gary Roberts had more points.
He probably
had more than 1,000, yeah, I would think.
And you said this player is not American, huh?
I did say that, yeah.
Fuck. I had a couple guys in mind, but they are very much American.
I would get them out of your mind. It would be nice to you.
Was this player a top 10 draft pick?
No. And that's 15.
Whoa.
Oh, boy.
Yeesh.
Okay. All right. I gotta stop messing around then.
Oh, you're just fucking... You've been fucking around up to this point?
Yeah, I have. I figured.
Oh, no. I'm sorry. That's 14. I was counting the...
Okay. Good. Is it Gary Roberts? Yeah. I can continue to dick around then as...
That's right. You have all the time in the world now.
Yeah. Really, no problem. Oh, boy.
Yeah.
Did this... I know what I want to ask, but I'm trying to... I don't know if this is what the right number is to put on... Did this player have more than 1,000 career penalty minutes?
Did he? Let's see. No.
Hmm. Man. All right, let's try to narrow it down. Is this person a right wing?
Yes.
Okay. We got that going for us.
All right.
Shawnee.
You have a guess or you're not? All right.
Yeah, I would. I mean, you get free guesses on who the guy is. I don't know why you're not taking them.
Oh, all right. Mike Knuble.
No.
Okay.
I don't know that he played 1,000 career games.
I don't know if he played with the Leafs either.
That's true. Great point.
Was he a fly? Was he even a Penguin?
I don't know. I have no fucking idea.
Just for the record, we know that he's not a current Penguin, but I don't think we know anything else.
But he's retired, right? Or is he not retired?
He is retired.
Okay.
Yeah, three more. Sean, you're up.
Right wing. Again, rare for the NHL.
Right wing who lasted 1,000 games but didn't get 1,000 points. Or also didn't get 300 goals?
Correct.
Okay. And also didn't have a lot of pen. What the hell was this person doing?
Retired in the 2000s, right?
Yeah.
Was the other
what
thing
was the
too?
Point of this person? This person's a terrible player.
Why did he exist? Know. Who are his people?
Yeah. Oh, my God.
Yeah.
But they won an award.
What award
did this
could that
player...
have been?
Okay. Did this player ever... play for the Detroit Red Wings?
No.
Everybody played for the Red Wings. This is
not feels this like, guy. Feels it like seems you, like
feels like you had something you were sniffing out there.
No, I didn't. That was a total like I'm just becoming conscious of how much time I was wasting, and so I
had to throw something out there.
That
Greg,
exactly
you're up.
It.
You have the second to last question.
Jesus Christ. I'm stumped.
Unless Sean wants to make a guess, but doesn't
no,
sound like
I did. I
all
yeah,
right.
I'd just be. I mean, I don't want to throw okay. at some Mike Knuble.
Was this player ever an NHL All-Star? There's a good question,
ooh,
right, Sean?
Was
now, is that postseason All-Star or is that like All-Star game? All-Star?
No, All-Star game.
Let's
like popularity.
See. Let's see. This isn't, it doesn't look like it, but Hockey Reference can be a little bit weird sometimes.
But
I don't think
so. According
to
Hockey Reference, not an All-Star.
I don't think so.
Yep. No, okay. Hockey Reference is usually pretty good. They could have, They never played in an all-star game then. They could have been picked and then not been able to.
But did not play in an all-star game. Okay.
Right. Okay.
Wow.
So this is, are we down to like question number 19 then?
Here's where I would recommend just throwing some names out there.
Yeah. I'm just trying to think. Did they play more than, and this is, I'm just going to my own wheelhouse here. Did they play more than three full seasons with the?
No. And now you will each have one guess, and then we're done, because that was 20.
So go ahead, Sean.
Oh boy, I got to do a guess. Okay. He played more than Shane Corson.
No, Greg.
So the points thing is throwing me. I don't think... Like, one name that came into my head would have been, like, Mike Ricci, but I don't think he was ever a Leaf.
He was never a Leaf.
Yeah. So he's kind of a scrub. He's played on the...
an award. I'm just openly trying to help Greg at this point because
you want to
know. No, I appreciate that. I'm fucking stumped. I'll go
Need an answer.
All right, I know you.
Well,
need
you still
an
you have another question, Greg. All right, like I think.
Do I?
No.
Because I was the odd number question.
Oh, that's so true. I must have counted wrong. Well, anyway.
All right. Is this... Okay, hear me. Was this person born in North America?
Yes. So he could be Mexican.
The only name I can think of, like, that would fit this bill of being like a scrub, maybe, would be like Scott Young, but I don't think he, I think he was American.
Mm. The answer.
And never a Leaf. Can I throw one more out there? The only other name that stick is Steve Thomas.
Ooh, so close. Steve Sullivan is the guy we were looking for.
I didn't remember him playing for the Penguins. Thomas, I don't think, was a Penguin, though, at any point, was he?
You asked if he was a current Penguin. That was the only, piece of information we got out of that.
Oh, did I get hung up on the Penguins? I think I fucking shit. I think I just screwed myself my own guess.
Steve Sullivan did play for the Penguins, though. So.
Oh, okay. All right, let's go to the next one.
All right, the next one.
That was challenging as shit.
This is number 272, and in the event of a tie where, you know, these guys played the same number of games or whatever, I'm just going to go with the one I think is more fun.
Okay.
That is the correct approach.
Yeah. So I landed on this guy, and Greg, it's to you. First question.
Was this player born in North America?
Yes.
Okay.
All right. Is this player a Hall of Famer?
No.
Has this player won a major National Hockey League award?
Yes.
What is a major? Yeah? Okay.
Major defined as Calder, Hart, Vezina, Selke, Norris.
Then no. And I think that's a little bit of a cheat, but okay.
Yeah.
Oh, and by the way, I forgot to say the award Steve Sullivan won was a Masterton, his second to last year.
Oh, okay. But Hart, Selke, Calder, Vezina, Norris are considered to be the major awards. Yes.
Sure. Okay. Yeah.
Okay.
All right. North American, not Hart. Is this player active?
No.
Okay. Is this player a goaltender?
Yes.
Oh. Ooh. All right. That's okay.
Oh, I know. That's a fucking... Sean, that's a Jennings Trophy fucking fucking thing.
That does feel very Jennings-ish.
Yeah, it feels very Jennings trophy.
You've got...
Yeah, sure. I'll go ahead. 1,000 games, Jennings trophy. Let's go with... You said not a Hall of Famer?
I did say that, yes.
Yeah, I could be fucking any goalie then. Tuukka Rask.
No, I can't imagine Tuukka Rask has played because
he did
1,000 games.
We said he's not active, right?
Yeah, we said he's
because here's my thing: 1,000 games for a goalie is a ton.
It's rare.
I feel like almost all the goalies with 1,000 games are going to make the Hall of Fame. So here's my question: He's not active. Did he retire within the last 3 years?
Yes.
Ooh. Is it Roberto Luongo?
It is Roberto Luongo, yeah.
Wow.
Of, right? Like,
there it is.
1,000 games for a goalie.
A lot of games.
Is like 1,800 for a player. It's
It's crazy. Yep.
Well done.
All right. Yeah. So Sean has one. Random number here. Okay. All right. So Sean, you're up first for this one now.
All right. Go with my typical is he a Red Wing? Hockey Hall of Fame? Is he a current?
No, he is not.
Okay.
Not a Hockey Hall of Famer.
Nope.
I'll go with my next question, Sean. Is this person born? Was this person born in North America?
Yes.
All right. So goodbye, all of you foreigners.
Is this person born in Canada?
Yep.
Nope. Okay, so they're good even.
That narrows it off. Jesus Christ. You know. No need for that. Is this person still an active player?
No.
Okay.
Okay, are they a forward?
Yeah. Took me a second. I just kind of blanked on where that information is located on the page. I know the guy is, like, I know in my head the guy is a forward, but I was like, I think I should double check your
hesitation makes like me and Sean think it's either Dustin Byfuglien or Brent Burns, but
or somebody who played before.
Again, I think neither of those guys hit 1,000 games yet, but Burns might have, I guess.
All right, so he's a forward, 1,000 games, not active currently.
Correct.
Has this person won either a Hart or a Conn Smythe?
No.
Okay. I had a guy in mind, but that's not the guy then.
Do they have 1,000 points?
Yep.
Or more. Okay. Because if they had exactly 1,000.
That would be fun, but no, they... Yeah.
Is this person a center?
Yes.
Okay.
Okay. All right. We're
not active, born in Canada, is a center. I'll make a guess. Mm-hmm. And he didn't have 1,000. He did or didn't have 1,000 points.
He did.
Did.
Oh, no, I don't want to guess. My guess is not 1,000 points.
Got it. Did this person retire in 2000 or later?
No.
Oh. Was this person on the Los Angeles Kings?
No.
Oh, okay.
That's 10, by the way.
Mm-hmm. Me know.
Just making sure. For the listener, etc.
Did this person have 400 goals?
Nope.
Oh.
Okay. So we're getting into kind of playmakery territory.
Was this person on the Chicago Blackhawks?
No.
Shit.
Did they have 1,000 penalty minutes?
Oh, yeah.
Wow, okay. I feel like that's... all right.
I shouldn't have been so effusive, but yeah. Oh, yeah.
Okay, now I'm trying to think of...
God damn it.
Okay. You go ahead, Greg.
Sure. Was this person on the Washington Capitals?
Yep.
Dale Hunter.
Yeah, that's right.
Yep.
Yeah! I can't believe you didn't pick up on the effusive penalty minutes.
Yeah, I picked up on it.
I was trying to think of a center with a lot of penalty minutes, and he didn't. That's the obvious one. And
that's the gold standard for centers of penalty minutes.
Yeah. I fucked up big time. Shouldn't have done that.
Context clues, baby. Bar Trivia 101.
Yep, that's exactly right. Okay, let's scroll down here. And this is for the win. This is for the win.
FTW. Yeah.
You guys are fucked.
Oh, foof. We just got foofed. That's how's that as a context clue?
I would be shocked. Yeah, well, great. Granted. Okay. Whatever.
I mean, who are you talking to here?
Yeah, exactly.
A guy who can't remember his relatives' birthdays, but can remember NHL shit and the king of nostalgia.
Yeah, that's true. Okay. Well, right. I believe it's to Greg, right?
To Greg. Yep.
Okay. All right. Was this person born in North America?
Yes.
Okay.
Hall of Famer?
No. Nope.
I guess I probably didn't need to ask that given the...
my shock and dismay at this name, yes.
Is this person an active player?
No.
Okay.
Okay, is this person a forward?
Yep.
Okay. God, he sounded like he had to look that up. That's...
I had, to be fair, I had to remind myself what position Dale Hunter played. So, don't...
True. Yes.
Okay, was this person... Has this person ever won any NHL award?
No.
Okay.
He didn't have to look that up.
And that's five.
okay, I got it. Did this player ever play for the Maple Leafs?
No.
You're on your own, Greg.
Did this person retire after 2000?
No.
All right.
So not okay. So retired in the 90s. Did this player have more than 800 career points?
No. Wait. Yes. Whoa. I'm sorry. Yes.
Oh. Okay.
I looked at the wrong column.
Jesus Christ. 800 career points. So we know he's a forward, and we know he's born in North America. Did this person...
I don't... Wait, so do we know... Yes, we do know he's North America, sorry.
Yeah. Did this player retire in the 1990s?
Yes.
Okay. That helps.
Are they a center?
No. And that's 10.
Not a center. Less than 800 points, you said?
No, over 800.
Over.
Over 800 points?
Yes.
Okay. Was this player ever a member of the New York Hockey Rangers?
No.
Okay. Had a thought there. Not a good one.
Did this player ever play for the Bruins?
Yes.
Oh, what are you smelling over there?
You know what? I'm not. I'm trying to hunt and peck for teams that seem like they had decent players in the...
Is this forward? Era. Okay. Sean, did we establish what position yet?
We have them as a winger.
We don't know
left or right. Okay. But we do have them down to a winger.
I don't know if you can answer this, but let's try it. Did this player primarily play on a checking line?
Yeah, I wouldn't be able to tell you that.
Okay. All right. Then I retract the question.
Okay.
Was this player ever a member of the Pittsburgh Penguins?
No.
Okay.
Was this player ever a... Like, I feel like the teams is what we got to do.
Yeah. I'm with you on that.
How many questions are we up to?
19.
Okay, we got a few. Did this player ever play? Did this player ever play for the Flyers?
Yes.
Oh, interesting information coming at you. 1,000 points? No, 800 points. Retired in the 1990s. North American. And
1,000 games, 800 points, I think. We didn't ask about 1,000 points.
No, I fucked up and said 1,000, yeah. But it's 800 okay. Is what we know. Yeah. Wow. Oh, is it my turn?
Yeah.
Yep.
Oh, fuck. Sorry. I was noodling through names in my head and didn't realize it was my turn. Remember the Bruins? Remember the Flyers? Right? Was this player a top 10 draft pick?
No.
Okay.
And that's 15.
Mwah!
All right. I have a 1980s Bruin / Flyer name. But I don't really know if it fits any of the other criteria. Let me throw out the one other thing I know about this person. Did this person ever win a Stanley Cup?
Let's see. I got to scroll down here. No.
Is it Brian Propp?
It is.
Wow! Yes. Look at you!
That was very impressive.
How many games did Brian Propp play?
1,016.
1,016.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
How many points did he have? I'm surprised.
1,004.
Oh, no way.
Yeah.
Wow. All right.
Yeah, you got there.
All I know about Brian Propp is he played for the Flyers and the Bruins, and he was in the Stanley Cup final like 8 years in a row with four different teams and never won.
That's fun. Yeah, he played 14 games for the Bruins, so that's a bit of a shell game there.
Oh, okay. But he was definitely on one of their cup final yep. teams.
The 90 cup final.
He went Flyers, Bruins, and then to the North Stars, I think, was the
That's
the
right, next yep.
But,
fantastic. Again, Quizmaster Lambert bringing it.
I like
with
that.
With the fun. That was really fun. I like that. Hopefully it was good for the listeners.
It wasn't. They hated
never know.
It. They're mad.
Apologies to Steve Sullivan if you're out there. We'll get you next time.
All right. I gotta make note of the guys we went through there. So
please,
I don't,
please
so
do.
I
we don't want to do
you could you could absolutely double
that's
up and
true.
It would not help us.
That'd be cruel. All right. That's the show for this week. What a fun way to end. Thanks to no one except for Raycon for sponsoring the show. Buy Raycon's earbuds, man. They're real good if you're looking for a pair of earbuds. And they're super affordable, too. You could read my stuff on ESPN.com, where I have a column up this week about the tire fire of the Buffalo Sabres and all the things that are wrong with the franchise. You could listen to ESPN on Ice. Me and Emily had Marty Biron on to talk about the Sabres, as well as Chris Peters to talk about his really fun story this week about the Battle Creek Rumblebees, which might be the worst team in modern hockey history. And then Mizampod, the pod that me and Lambert and my wife Ruby do, dropped its episode on the penultimate episode of the Top Chef season, but also looking ahead to the finale. The finale is Thursday night. We're doing this show on Thursday, so you might be hearing this after the finale is over. And it was an amazing season, and we thank everybody for checking out the podcast, the Patreon surge and subscribers. Obviously, Lambert, the Mizampod effect.
Yeah, people can't get enough of people not knowing how to pronounce food words.
Italian words.
Yeah. Yeah, the other thing on the Patreon is I have a newsletter, and twice a week it comes out, and then me and Sean Gentile once a month do our dumb podcast Stick to Sports, where this month there's a guy who intentionally put together a best movies of all time bracket in the most annoying fashion possible, and there's like I think 1,000 different brackets or movies in the brackets that you have to whittle down to the best movie ever. We're just gonna do the 2000s and 2010s, but that's what the show is this month. We're gonna record it next weekend. So
that, I mean, it sounds like you're kind of invading into Pete and DJ's territory with some of that stuff. Are you okay being so close to
I've never listened to that show. So I don't know. I wouldn't. Sorry, I guess.
Sean?
You can find me on The Athletic. I had another edition of Salary Cap Court this week, which I think we did on this show once.
So we did,
yeah.
Enjoyed that. You want to find out whether people like Nicholas Backstrom and Jakub Voracek have bad contracts. you will instead just get my opinion on the answer to that question, but that's there. I have the 12 fans that you will meet and probably not like very much in when the NHL comes back. And everything on The Athletic right now, you go, if you're not a subscriber, you can get a 30-day free trial. I would suggest using that now because you'll get that Hall of Fame piece that I was talking about next week, which I think is going to generate a lot of interesting discussion. And you can find out who I personally nominated in the various categories and then come yell at me for being wrong about that.
Exciting. Looking forward to that. That's going to be fun. All right, everybody. Thanks for joining us, and we will talk to you next week. On Puck Soup, where we'll have lots of Hall of Fame shit probably to talk about. All right, thanks everybody. Bye.
See you.
Bye.
Sticks and hits and goals and saves and slap shots and goons. We've got sportly commentary to what if you commute. But we also cover movies, TV shows, eats and tunes. It's your weekly bowl of hockey and nonsense. Puck Soup.